Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
Good Sunday morning. It is not Rick Moore. It is Sean McCorch, your reliable monthly substitute host in a very raucous WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville Station. And my guest sitting across from me looks a little nervous, but smiling is Jamie Curtis. Jamie, Jamie Kurtz. But that's the first time. That's the first time you've heard that. Jamie Kurtz is a professor at JMU and an author of a new book that we want to talk about, and also a theater friend. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Your book is called The Happy Traveler. Give us the full title.
The full title is The Happy Traveler: Unpacking the Secrets of Better Vacations.
Yeah, and that sounds awesome. And it has just come out now.
Just this week. Yep.
So we can people can find out more information about the book that we're going to talk about at your website.
My website, jamiekurtz.com, J-A-I-M-E.
Right.
K-U-R-T-Z.
K-U-R-T-Z. And also, is there a The Happy Traveler website too, or do they just go to your website?
They just go to my website. You could also find it on Amazon, though.
Right.
So, and very accessible.
And at booksellers near you. The Happy mm-hmm. Traveler. Okay, so let's jump into the book first.
Okay.
Who is the happy traveler?
Well, it's something I aspire to be. Mm-hmm. But one reason I wanted to write the book is because I realized that as I was getting the opportunity or the privilege to travel more and more and see more of the world, which had always been my life dream, I wasn't a happy traveler. I wasn't enjoying myself. I was very stressed. I was always wondering if I was missing something better because of what I was choosing to do, and missing home and having FOMO and spending too much time on social media and just doing everything wrong. So the irony is that I actually study happiness and savoring and mindfulness and being in the moment, and yet I was being just a total failure at this whole endeavor. So I wanted to write this book to kind of delve into why that was and offer some advice on how we can all travel a little bit better. Since it is so rare and so expensive to go on vacation, it's such a privilege. It's important that we get as much out of it as we can.
Happiness and savoring. So the book isn't a travel guide about places to go, like a Fromer's Guide, but more mm-hmm. how to be a traveler and mm-hmm. how to prepare yourself for it mm-hmm. and how to get the most out of the experience.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you go to Barnes & Noble or any bookstore, you will walk the travel section and you will see guidebooks on pretty much every part of the world, what to do in any given place, where to eat, even guided walks telling you exactly what you should look at, where you should stop for coffee and so on.
Right.
That's all covered. But there was no book out there on how to actually enjoy what you're doing and how to see what you're seeing. So this is a general travel book that can help you no matter where you're going.
So people should buy the book. So I don't want to get spoilers, but can you give us a few examples mm-hmm. that you'd like to talk about that people can learn by reading your book? The Happy Traveler.
Sure. So one thing I talk about a lot is that you take yourself with you no matter where you go.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this idea that if you just can get away from everyday life, just plop yourself down on a beautiful beach or go to somewhere completely different outside of your comfort zone, you're going to feel fulfilled. You're going to feel a sense of joy, of meaning. But it's not that easy. Right? Just putting yourself somewhere new isn't enough. So we also need to work on clearing our head of our anxieties, identifying our problem habits that come with us wherever we go.
Mm-hmm.
All these, we have to cultivate the right kind of mindset in order to enjoy ourselves. So just buying a ticket is not enough to have a great time.
So you take yourself with you wherever you go. That's a great quote. But what about, is there a chapter or information in the book about traveling companions.
Mm-hmm.
If you travel with other people who maybe have different habits than you do, like I'm more the sit on a veranda in a breeze and read a book kind, whereas my mm-hmm. wife and her family, they love to like go out, hike and get exhausted mm-hmm. and come back sweaty. So is there advice in the book on how to deal with traveling companions when you have different ways of traveling?
Yes, there is. So when I was outlining the book, I knew that there had to be something in there about this, about traveling with other people. But I didn't realize just how important that was until I started talking to people uh-huh. about the book. Uh-huh. And when I would describe the different topics I cover, every time I would get to that one, people would say, oh, that's the one I need. I need to read that chapter. And so, yeah, great question. There is advice on that topic. It's not always easy, right, to travel with people. I think sometimes we just get really carried away when we're talking to a friend, maybe over happy hour. Oh, wouldn't it be great to go to Europe? Oh, I've always wanted to go there too. Oh, well, why don't we go together?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you buy the tickets and you're so excited and you might end up realizing very quickly that, ooh, we are not compatible. We're good happy hour friends,
right,
maybe once in a while, but that doesn't mean that we should be going halfway around the world together and spending 24 hours a day together. And that can be really challenging. You could have really fundamentally different goals, like you and your family. You just want different things. And there could be a lot of resentment, too, because you only have so many days in a place. You've spent a lot of money to go there. And you want to do what you want to do, rightfully so. But you also want to spend time together. So how do you resolve all of that? So it's a really great exercise in communication and compromising. And that jet lag, fatigue, culture shock, all of that can actually be way more stressful than we realize to travel with other people.
Well, traveling itself can be stressful.
Mm-hmm.
You said you've traveled a lot. Did you grow up in a family where you went on a lot of vacations, mm-hmm. or was it just something that you knew that you wanted to do and mm-hmm. you figured out a way to integrate that into your adult life?
My family did not travel when we were growing up. It was not a priority at all.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in southeastern Pennsylvania. So within 50-mile radius, we had Hershey Park. So we went there. We went to Dorney Park, which is another amusement park. We went to a KOA campsite about 20 miles away. And that was great because I got to eat all the snacks that I wanted. So that was the best part about those camping trips. Like, I just had all the snacks.
Mm-hmm.
And once we went to the Jersey Shore.
Wow. All the way to the Jersey Shore.
Yep. It's Cape May and Wildwood.
Yeah.
My parents thought we should see the ocean. So we did that. And so traveling was just not a part of what we did at all. Flying was terrifying. So if you couldn't get there in the car in a couple of hours, So in high school, I took art history as a senior in high school and really fell in love with European art and Renaissance stuff and just loved learning about all of that. And
that sounds like an awesome high school.
Yeah, it was AP art history. Mrs. Braun, shout out to Mrs. Braun. So Mrs. Braun also planned trips to Europe for students.
Ah.
And she knew I loved art history so much. And she actually called my mom at work and told her that I really needed to go with her on, I get choked up talking about Mrs. Braun.
That's
I
lovely.
Need to go on this trip with her. And a bunch of my friends were going and a couple other teachers. And I guess my parents talked about it. And I'm sure that they were terrified because not only going to Europe, but flying was a big anxiety and money, of course. But they decided I should go and they'd make it work. And so I went and that kind of gave me the bug.
Sure.
So, but the whole time I was there, I thought this is a once in a lifetime. You know, I'm never going to travel to Europe again. This is not something that my people do. Like, this is very strange and wonderful. But lo and behold, in college, I went to a place, Millersville University, and I was in the honors program. And every summer they had a different scholarship for people to go take some trip.
Mm-hmm.
And the year I did it was actually very much a repeat of the high school trip I did. It was a Renaissance and Reformation art class in Europe.
Interesting.
So I got the scholarship to go for 3 weeks. And once again, there was that once in a lifetime kind of mindset.
Right.
It's like twice in a lifetime, I guess. But still, I'm like, you know, I'm going to graduate school. I am not going to do this again for a long time. And so travel was this magical privilege that I didn't think I'd have again. And then fast forward 10 plus years, I have a job, I have money, I have time. Oh my goodness, I can travel.
And so that door had already been opened mm-hmm. for you earlier.
Yeah, and so I started going more and more places, and that's when that whole sense of, huh, this is losing its ability to wow me started taking hold. And that was very sad, especially for someone who is studying happiness. Like, mm-hmm. I am giving myself the ultimate opportunity to make a great experience for myself. That is my job. That is my one job on this trip, and I'm not doing a very good job of it. So I began to be intrigued by applying what I knew about happiness to travel. And so, you know, it all came together.
Go. The book is The Happy Traveler. My guest is Jamie Kurtz. Her new book, The Happy Traveler, is out this week, and you can find out more information about it by going to her website, jamiekurtz.com, and then we'll spell that out again for you, JAIMEKURTZ.com. So you weren't an art historian major after
no.
all. You studied psychology,
mm-hmm.
and you have your PhD. Is it just a PhD in psychology?
Mm-hmm. Right from UVA, right here.
From UVA, mm-hmm. the school down the street.
Right down the street.
I've heard of it. And you teach psychology at JMU to grad students in the psychology program?
Occasionally grad students and psychology majors.
Psychology majors,
yeah.
Excuse me.
So usually juniors and seniors.
And your research has been on happiness and savoring and mindfulness. mindfulness, not so much. and you figured out a way to integrate that into your travels. And at what point did it occur to you, someone needs to do a book about this, and that someone needs to be me?
I can pinpoint the exact moment. So I was in Maine giving mm-hmm. a talk. I give talks to continuing education healthcare professionals. There's 6 hours every day that I'm doing them. 6 hours a day, totally exhausting. Just me talking for 6 hours to an audience. And always around 2:30 in the afternoon, I am so done. Just like, oh, let me be done. I can't talk anymore. And in this particular talk, around that point, I had an example about travel just thrown in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized as I was doing this drive in Maine after one of the talks that every time I get to that example, I perk up. I love talking about travel. And it was a particularly relevant example for happiness research. I'm like, you know, there's a lot of happiness research that applies to travel, huh? Started kind of outlining it in my head and thinking, well, there's so many books out there on happiness. Surely someone has tackled this. And I was kind of crossing my fingers that they hadn't. And I go to my hotel and I'm on Amazon and on the web and Googling things. Like, not really. So I thought, you know, this could actually be something.
So you had the experience of a teacher who took you to Europe in high school,
mm-hmm.
got to travel to Europe again in college. But I imagine somebody listening to the show, well, someone, I won't create a mythical person, someone like me, who I did a little bit of traveling with my family mm-hmm. when I was younger, but I never, you know, then I, once I got out of school, I had to work and I had to pay bills and then, you know, and I have a family, but now my kids are old enough that they're starting to leave the house and going off to college and things like that. So somebody like me, what's your advice on how to become a traveler? Do you go to a travel agent? Do you throw a dart
mm-hmm.
at your globe? do you try to stress something that, you know, like with you as art history, maybe something in your life that you've always been interested in that you could use an excuse to go out and learn a bit more about it. How do we make that leap?
Mm-hmm. Well, one, I think you need to identify what exactly are your goals, right? So some typical travel goals, relaxation, big mm-hmm. one, education, adventure, some kind of cultural experience like art, music, and being honest with yourself, realizing, you know, not the shoulds. Oh, I really should go to look at the Eiffel Tower because that's what everyone that's needs what to check does, that box right. off. Now, what do you really need? Yeah. And then realize that you don't usually need to go halfway around the world to find that thing, to fulfill that need, right? So if you're in search of adventure, sure, you could go to the Himalayas, mm-hmm. or you could go to Machu Picchu or mm-hmm. some such, or you could go to West Virginia and go hiking there, or you could go take a kite surfing lesson down in the Outer Banks, right? So once you identify that need, then you can think about what are your parameters, time-wise, financially, what's your comfort zone? Maybe you want some kind of sporty adventure, but you don't want to go to a new country and deal with a language barrier and all of that. So kind of an honest assessment about what you want, but also what are your limitations? And then that's nice because it limits you to maybe a manageable subset of options. So the world is that's kind of an overwhelming set of options. I could go anywhere in the world. Wow.
Yeah.
It's kind of paralyzing. So limiting your choices is good. And then, travel agent, sure. Mm-hmm. The web has, you know, made it much easier to design trips for yourself, but it also makes it much more stressful. So outsourcing some of that to somebody else is a fine idea.
Well, how do you travel?
How do I travel? So recently, my travels have been to take students on study abroads.
Mm.
Yes. So I just last week got back from Denmark and Sweden. We took 13 students from JMU. We started in Stockholm. We went for about 7 days. Then we went to a castle in southern Sweden and stayed in a 13th century castle.
Nice.
Which is very, very cool, for about 6 days or so. And then we went to Copenhagen for 6 days or so and then left. So sometimes I will go earlier, stay later, and just try to make the most of my plane ticket over there and mm-hmm. just... Mm-hmm. go other places in Europe and do that. I like to stay in Airbnbs. So you get a little bit more of the local flavor, staying in somebody's apartment. They're not there, but
right.
still you get right. to interact with them. They have oftentimes like local suggestions that are off the beaten path. You just have the comfort of having a kitchen, of having a living room, just an apartment, like a real resident. So it's a good way to get really immersed, I think, quickly.
And these students, are these students of yours in your program, or does JMU have a special travel program?
Both. So,
okay.
Yeah, so they're mostly psychology majors, and they're taking a psychology class with me. It's called Exploring the Good Life in Scandinavia. And, yeah.
Nice.
And it's for credit and all of that, but they go through JMU's Office of International Programs in mm-hmm. order to do it. And JMU is great for having a lot of these short-term study abroad programs, because sometimes a whole semester is just too much given all of the students' requirements. But a nice 3-week, 2-week stint is pretty perfect.
And as an experienced traveler, do you like going back to the same places and bringing new people with you? Do you start to feel like you're the resident expert on these places that you get to go back to?
More and more. So this is my fourth time going, fourth summer in a row.
Mm-hmm.
The first summer I took students. One of the places we went, I had never been before.
Nice.
So, that was stressful. It's never easy. It's never easy. Just little logistics like finding a restaurant for 15 people to have a meal.
Sure.
Is never easy. But yeah, I think it's great. I am, one, getting to see more and more of the layers of these places. So not just going to the tourist attractions, but wandering through little neighborhoods and going to little cafes that I hadn't seen before. And every year you learn more about a place. But also, as I do go back, it's harder and harder to be wowed by the same things mm-hmm. over and over. Mm-hmm. So one nice antidote to that is having students with me who are seeing it for the first time
yeah.
and hearing them just say, wow, as we come out of the subway and there's this massive cathedral, or wow, these Swedish meatballs are amazing. It's like, oh yeah, that's right. They are right. So having these newcomers kind of remind me that where I am is great. That's a great travel tip. Traveling with someone who has seen less than you or who has never been to a place that you're returning to can help you maintain that appreciation. I've learned.
Excellent. Nice travel trip. I often feel the same way when I bring people to UVA for the first time.
Yeah.
And they walk around and they see the rotunda and they see the lawn. And I go, oh, yeah, that's right. This is kind of awesome.
Right.
My guest is Dr. Jamie Kurtz and her book, The Happy Traveler. This is WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And we're back. This is Sean McCord with my guest, Jamie Kurtz, and her book, The Happy Traveler. Jamie, you mentioned earlier talking about what are your goals, outline your goals when you go on a trip. And one of them that you mentioned was relaxation. And I had to write that down. And this is a semi-serious question, but is relaxation and traveling possible? Do they go hand in hand?
I think that we overestimate how much they go hand in hand.
Okay.
So there's a term in the travel industry called the fly and flop, where you fly to a place and you flop down on the beach.
Yes.
And that's your vacation.
Yes.
And that's what a lot of us crave.
I'm totally for that.
Yeah. But I think, and there's a lot of research to suggest that that's way harder than we expect.
Mm-hmm.
For one, just all the logistics of travel is exhausting, right? You're switching time zones, you're somewhere new, everything is work, right? Like figuring out how does the money work and where do I mail a postcard and where do I get my coffee in the morning? Mm-hmm. And all of that is like in everyday life, you don't have to think about all those things. They're just habits, they're routines.
Sure.
So just the process of being in a new place can be a little bit tiring. And then also, we're not always very good at flopping, just sitting on a beach and being, right? So there's some research out of UVA, actually, my grad school advisor, Tim Wilson, did a couple years ago that got a lot of press. They asked people to sit in a room alone for 10 minutes, 12 minutes, just be with their thoughts. They couldn't have any props, and people did not like this. And then in one version of the study, the most famous, is that they gave them this like electric shock machine and said, you know, sit here, just be with your thoughts. But if you'd like, you can give yourself electric shocks. And they found that a surprising number of people actually did that. So the articles that were written about this whole experiment were things like people would rather give themselves electric shocks than be alone with their own thoughts. And yet, that's exactly what we crave when we think about these kinds of vacations, right? Mm-hmm. All I want to do is sit on a beach and just look at the ocean. And surely some people can do that. They have that mental capacity. But a lot of us, we're so distracted all the time. We're so used to multitasking. We're so used to just always reflexively getting out our phones and scrolling through social media and such that why do we think that if we just put ourselves on a beach that we're going to be able to relax and clear our heads? We don't do that in everyday life. Why should we be able to do it on vacation? So that's that idea that you take yourself with you wherever you go. It's really hard to do that.
So that you actually touch on one of my questions. You travel with college students. They're younger, and people are prone to criticize this younger generation for constantly needing to be plugged in. And put down your phone, you know, and enjoy yourself, be present where you are. And yet, I have very clear memories of going on vacations with my parents and never seeing my dad's face because he always had a camera in front of it. I think maybe it looks a little different with this generation, but I think we've all had issues with trying to be present. Or my argument is we have our own ways of being present.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually brings up a question when you're traveling with people who are used to being plugged in. And I got to say, I'm not of that generation, but I include myself in that. I'm used to having my phone by my side.
Me too.
How do you deal with traveling where, you know, you may not be able to use your phone or may not be able to use your laptop? Should you even bring those things along? Do you have recommendations about that?
I do in the book. It's hard because I feel very hypocritical because I'm like you. Like, I'm very used to checking my social media, sometimes even as I'm doing it. Why am I looking at this? But it's just a habit that we've all developed.
And by the way, we're Facebook friends, and I really enjoy your photos from your travels. I get a little bit of vicarious interest myself in seeing the places you are.
Well, Thanks. And I enjoy sharing them, especially if I'm traveling alone, which I do every now and then. And I see something and I'm a little sad that there's nobody there to share it with me.
Absolutely.
Yeah. By putting it up there, maybe it looks braggy, but it's a different motive. It's more like, I don't want to just be having this experience by myself. So let me put it out there for others. Mm-hmm. And it makes me feel less alone. Yeah. So there really is a great utility for technology when we travel. But it can definitely take center stage, right? And we don't want to let that happen. So with my students, I see a wide range of reliance on social media.
Yeah.
I've seen some people who just don't do it at all, or very, very minimally. Like, they check in with their parents and every so often we'll check their email and stuff. But I see some who, we go into any kind of building or establishment, and the first thing is there Wi-Fi? Is there Wi-Fi?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes to the point where they're not seeing what, like, they're literally not seeing what is there.
Yeah.
And that is the other end of the spectrum that I think is really sad. I understand how that habit develops. And if you're not aware of what you're doing, how that can just be what you default to. But it's sad. So I don't know what the answer is to that. But there is some research to suggest that, like, we can use it well. So one of my favorite studies that I talk about in the book, I didn't do it, but this researcher, she was doing a memory study, and she took a big bunch of students to an art museum, and they all had their smartphones, of course, and she had some of them take a picture of each painting. So, like, just take a photo of each painting that you see. Don't, you know, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Some people were told to zero in on a detail. So look at the paintings and maybe take a picture of, like, an interesting detail that you like, a brush stroke you think is interesting, anything.
Yeah.
And then at the end, she let some time go by, I guess, and she showed them, like, all the pictures in the art museum and said, Did you see this one? And the people who had taken a picture of details were much better able to remember what they saw.
Right.
Because they were thinking about it critically. They were really looking at it. But people who were just taking pictures of the whole thing weren't. They couldn't really remember. They weren't putting it in their heads. So we can use technology to help us look and see and store memories. But we can also use it in a way that is really mindless.
Yeah. My mother tells a story of, probably 9 or 10, and we were driving up the coastal highway in California, passing through Big Sur, and I'm sitting in the back seat reading a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad got, like, yelled at me, like, put down the darn comic book and look out the window for a little while, you know. And I put down the comic book, looked out the window, and, like, meh. And went back to my comic book. But the funny thing is, I kind of remember that because I really enjoyed just having time nobody talking to me, where I was just being allowed to read a comic book. So what you take out of any experience is often what you bring into it. Mm-hmm. So your book, The Happy Traveler, is full of tips for people to be present, and how to prepare themselves for a trip. Yep. How to get the most out of a trip. Mm-hmm. What bullet points of advice do you give to your students who are going on one of these trips for the first time?
Mm-hmm. I tell them to do a little bit of research ahead of time, get excited. There's some research to show that the anticipation phase is sometimes the most exciting.
Mm.
So partly you're in fantasy mode, right? It's all wonderful. It's all great. And why not add that into your life a little bit? So think about the time leading up to it. Read about the places. Look at the pictures. Think about what you want to do there. Certainly we talk about technology and managing technology, but
yeah.
I can't, you know, it's hard to enforce that on the ground. We talk about, well, packing. Don't pack too much, but it's hard to, usually there's always a lot of regret as we're dragging suitcases over cobblestones and up and down staircases.
Uh-huh.
Overpacking can really be a buzzkill. And let's see, talk a lot about we talk a lot about a lot.
Okay. Well, You can find out by picking up your own copy of the book, The Happy Traveler, at your local bookstore, at online, or on your website, Jamie Kurtz. And I'll say it one more time, J-A-I-M-E-K-U-R-T-Z, so you don't call her the wrong name like I did. Let's talk about the book. On your website, you link to an article from your agent, who had very, very nice things to say about this woman, Jamie Kurtz, who came to her with a book proposal. So, and this is another thing that I like to talk about on my show. This is an aspirational show, Jamie. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of people who have figured out a way to lead their lives, have jobs, have careers, have families, and still do art. And writing a book is certainly an art. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned at this conference in Maine where you decided, well, maybe I need to be the person to write this book. But how do you go from there to actually making a pitch to an agent? And at what point in the process were you when you did that pitch? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I had the idea a couple years ago, and I just kind of Googled, how do you write a nonfiction book?
Huh.
I always start with the Google, the big question, and I knew nothing. Uh-huh. So I've done a lot of academic writing, but nothing for like popular press or non-academic audiences. So I learned that for fiction, you write the whole thing and then you send it out and hope somebody bites.
Right.
But for nonfiction, you write a proposal. And so much of your proposal actually stems from your platform. Lost the word there. And that's like who you are and why should you do this. So I did a little internet research. Jane Friedman's website, she's a local person, but a huge web presence and a lot of great resources for writers at all stages of the game. And I learned that I needed to start blogging. So I got a blog on Psychology Today, mm-hmm. which has a huge reach. Mm-hmm. And I started blogging about happiness and travel and all kinds of things I thought were interesting, and started getting a lot of followers and hits, partly because Psych Today has such a great reach. So that was important. And I went to a travel writing conference. It's called the Women in Travel Summit.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Now, how propitious is that there's actually a conference out there, sounds like, to help you specifically?
Yeah, and actually a theater friend of mine knew the woman who had started it. They met in Africa on some trip, and she just said, hey, you know, I think you two might hit it off. And I learned about the conference through her. So it all really started with these couple of people who put me in touch with, you know, you can always trace it back to like one really lucky encounter. So I went to this Women in Travel Summit, and there I met a couple other people who were trying to do various kinds of travel writing. And one woman told me about the Writer's Digest conference, which is in New York City every year in August. Mm-hmm. And at that conference, you get to pitch to agents. And that's one of the best things about it. You get to sit down with an agent, like speed dating. You get like 3 minutes, make your pitch. And if they are interested, they'll give you their card. And that means send me what you have.
Right.
So I went and I had this pitch, and I just found some agents in doing some research who were specialized in nonfiction, prescriptive nonfiction, and went to them and got a fair amount of interest, actually. Writer's Digest Conference was a great, great thing to do. And ended up having several, and the proposal actually wasn't done. So I was like, oh my gosh, they want to see it. So I quickly came home and worked on it all weekend. And it was basically a bio of me and why I should be the one to do this and why I think this topic is going to be marketable. So a lot of kind of market research, and then a sample, two sample chapters.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually pretty extensive. And then sent it to them and got like 5 different offers from agents. And,
it's very impressive.
Yeah. I was very, very happy, and went with Maria at Stone Song in New York. And we, then really tightened up the proposal, and she then took it to publishers, and we really matched well with Oxford University Press, who has a nice trade books division, and so went with them. And January of 2016, got a contract, and they said, you have 9 months. Huh. We won it in August. So it was an intense year, and haven't got a chance to like do theater or anything for a while, but it was fun. And I really enjoyed the process of writing much more than I thought I would. So it was great. Yeah. From Writer's Digest to finished product, it was less than 2 years.
Pardon me. This is an improper question. Did they give you an advance to do the book?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they did. So that was very exciting. It looks a little bit like that car that's sitting out there in the parking lot. Came at a good time.
So I have to imagine that my guest is Jamie Kurtz, and her book is The Happy Traveler. And I need you to look it up. You should Google it, because Google is our friend.
Yep,
not only can
Google
tell you how to write a book, but it can tell you how to buy a book.
Yeah, we talk about how technology is so terrible.
Not really.
When it comes to traveling, but it's wonderful in so many ways.
And writing a blog kind of made you, is it fair to say that made you a writer, or at least gave you not only the discipline, but gave you the material that you could point to.
Mm-hmm.
And how much of, the book is completely original. Had you touched, because I have read some of your articles, but I haven't had a chance to read your book yet. I will. How much of the book was in your blog already, or was it really, were you starting fresh?
I was mostly starting fresh. Some of the big ideas, like technology when you travel, or getting along with people when you travel, I had touched on a little bit, but it wasn't really developed. It was much more short and digestible. So the book is digestible as well. But I had the privilege of expanding the ideas in the book. So
take some of your better ideas and turn them into actual chapters.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
So that was very fun. But yeah, the blog was a good lesson in how to write for the public, as opposed to writing for academic journals, which are very jargony and not very accessible. So I really enjoy writing something that everybody can read and use, as opposed to journal articles, which are important for the field and advancing the science, but definitely is not something that, you know, anyone is going to read outside the field. And when you study happiness and well-being, you want people to know that stuff. You want to be able to disseminate it and put it out there. So I loved having the opportunity to do that with this book.
So I imagine somebody at home listening to the show or listening to this podcast. So, I want to be a writer. Mm-hmm. So they've written down blogging. Mm-hmm. That helps. Research. That helps. We'll get back to that. Writer's Digest Conference. Now, the Writer's Digest Conference, you mentioned that fiction writers just kind of tend to, you know, mail their transcripts off to publishing houses and see who bites. Is the Writer's Digest Conference also a good place for fiction writers to go to?
Oh, yeah. I didn't mean to say that they do it like willy-nilly.
Mm-hmm.
But one approach is to just send, for any kind of author, is to send like a general query letter to agents that you've identified as potentially good fits.
Oh, very good.
Mm-hmm. So there are some really great books out there and blogs on how to do all of this. Like janefriedman.com is a great one, and she links to all kinds of other resources. And so this information is readily available. But so that's one way to do it, to send a query letter identifying the agent at the agency and why you think this person is a good fit. And then if they're interested in seeing the whole thing, they will contact you. You don't send them the whole thing.
Right.
So that's a very common way of doing it. I just wanted to go to Writer's Digest, partly to learn more about the whole business and the pitch, called the Pitch Slam. The Pitch Slam was a nice bonus.
A pitch slam?
Pitch slam. That's where you speed date with agents. Yeah.
Are you literally moving from table to table?
They ring a bell and your time is up, and then you go to the next one.
That sounds kind of awesome.
It is pretty cool. Yeah.
My guest is Jamie Kurtz. Her book is The Happy Traveler. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Welcome back to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. This is Sean McCord, my guest, Jamie Kurtz, talking about her book, The Happy Traveler, and also talking about becoming an author. So you've gone to the Writer's Digest Conference. You've gone through the Pitch Slam, which sounds kind of awesome. How did you pick the agent that you picked? How was that the best fit for you?
Mm-hmm. Partly I looked on Publishers Weekly at all of the agents who were interested in representing me and how many books they had sold.
Mm-hmm.
And Maria had sold many books. And she also had a vision for her relationship with me as being not just this book, but developing. She likes to develop authors for a career.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoyed that, how she takes the long view. And while I don't necessarily have another book in mind right now, I love knowing that that would be an opportunity.
This is not necessarily your one and only book.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great.
Yeah.
So I think you benefit from, you've been in academia, you know how to do research, so you did your research. No research sometimes, but just firing up Google and finding the right website for someone who's already done this before. But in retrospect, it sounds like you took all the right steps to get you to where you are now. But is there something that you wish you had known going into this process that might have made it a little easier?
Looking back, I wish I would have blogged even more.
Okay.
Developed that presence even more. I think a lot of writers are introverts.
You know, yes.
They want to lock themselves up with a computer or a notebook and spend a lot of time in their own head putting things on paper. So the whole idea of promoting yourself is foreign and awkward to many authors. And I am one of those people. So I wish I would have, and I could still do it. I could do it even more today. I can go write a blog post today. It's not over yet, but I wish in the time leading up to it that I would have blogged more regularly. It's just easy to let that fall to the back burner.
Yeah.
And a lot of the very successful writers I know and I've read about are religious about getting stuff out very regularly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just getting their presence known.
Yep.
Self-promotion. That's a tough one. You have to come on the radio shows.
Mm-hmm.
you have to go introduce yourself to agents. Do you think your theater background helped with that at all?
I think so. I think it makes things like this a little bit more comfortable. But it's the whole approach is awkward,
yeah.
Right? In theater, you get a cue.
Yes.
When you go out and everyone, you know what to do, you practiced it, but
there are lines
that, yeah, you say, but going up to a person at a conference and when they seem busy and occupied, and
yeah,
that's different. There's not a lot of rehearsal for that in theater.
No, there's not, so. Not much preparation for that, except, mm-hmm, well, except for maybe auditions.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah. I had a blog. Well, technically, I guess I still have a blog. I haven't taken it down. I haven't added anything to it in a long, long time. But I had a blogging period in the early 2000s, and I was tickled when my dad passed away. Well, that sounds like a terrible way of saying that. But when my dad passed away, we were going through his stuff. I discovered a binder where he had printed out my blog posts on 8.5x11 hole punched paper and put them in a binder, and it was marked with my name on it on his shelf. And on the one hand, I was like, Daddy didn't really need to do that because it's in the internet. It's there forever. You can just fire up and look at it. On the other hand, it was really sweet,
yeah,
that he went through this trouble, you know, and kind of, you know, because he thought of his son as, I don't know, a published author or something.
Mm-hmm.
So two points for blogging. Anybody out there, it's so easy these days. You don't have to be on Psychology Today. You can,
no.
You can fire up your own, mm-hmm, and fire up your own site. Just talk to your nephew or your next door neighbor or young, young man or young woman in high school who knows these things, and they can show you how to start it up.
Yeah, and guest posting on other people's blogs, established blogs. I guess that's another thing I could have done, and I didn't. But that was something that was recommended to me. People who have established themselves as an authority in your whatever area you're trying to break into, if there's a way to connect with that person, if they have a blog or a podcast that you could come talk on or write for, that is another recommended way of getting your name out there.
Yeah. And by the way, let me give a shout out for the Psychology Today blog site. Mm-hmm. In addition to my guest, Jamie Kurtz, author of The Happy Traveler, there are many very interesting bloggers and writers on that site, many mm-hmm. of whom are, you know, very esteemed in their fields.
Definitely.
And it's the sort of thing that, you know, you may be used to reading news reports online, but here's a way to just dive into and learn interesting things about humanity. So mm-hmm. you're given 9 months to write a book.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you didn't do much traveling during that time either.
I did. I went to study.
You
I
did.
Taught my study abroad, and I went to Stockholm early and spent a week there before the students came. And then after the students left, I went to Budapest. And my idea was I was going to go there. I rented an Airbnb apartment, and I just hold up and finish the book. So incorporated some travel into the process.
That's perfect. I mean, yeah. what a perfect justification for going. You have to travel because you're writing about traveling. You have to be happy while you're traveling. Just do you get to take all that out of your taxes? No, I want to ask that question, but it sounds like a pretty good deal.
Mm-hmm.
So when did you know you were done? Did you have a goal set up? You had an outline. Mm-hmm. Did you know, have a sense of how many pages it was going to be? How many chapters were going to be? When did you know that, okay, I've just typed the final word?
I did this. I had a 6,000 to 8,000 word. That was my deal.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up going over that a little bit, but nobody seemed to mind. I had the chapters I wanted to write, and I did them out of sequence. I did the hardest, what I thought would be the hardest ones first, and saved the easier ones, or where I really knew what I wanted to say, for later. And
good idea.
Yeah. And thankfully, we had a lot of snow that winter, a fair amount of snow that left me just kind of at home
mm-hmm.
with my computer starting in January. And like, all right, let's go. And it went much faster than I thought, actually, even though I only wrote maybe 3 hours a day. And then I realized that that's a fairly common thing. People can't write 8 hours a day. Like, your brain just doesn't work that way.
No.
So I would get up early. I would get the computer and coffee and just get going. I wrote most of the book in my jammies.
Nice.
I don't know why you need to know that, but there you go. And by, you know, 9 a.m., like, all right, that's that. That's that for the day. Sometimes at night I would edit or read things over. But it ended up being far less overwhelming than I thought it was going to be.
So I write, and sometimes I get into a zone where, like, I'm doing my daily stuff, you know, my work and feeding myself and spending mm-hmm. time with my family and all that. But I'm like, I can't wait to sit down and start writing again because mm-hmm. it's just gnawing away that part of my brain. Did you get into that zone?
Yeah, I did. I wasn't sure what I was getting myself into. I didn't know if I would dread it, if I would love it, mm-hmm. somewhere in between. And I mostly really enjoyed it. I mean, you get to write exactly what you want to write and things that you care about. And on your own terms, on your own time, like it was a happy time. Like, I look back on last year really fondly and now I'm like, what have I done this year? Like, anyway. But yeah, it was really enjoyable. And there were only a couple days where I was like, not feeling it today.
Yeah. Yeah, and what did you do in those days? Did you just power your way through it, or give yourself a break?
A couple of days I powered through, and those were never easy days. So I realized there are a couple of days that if I didn't feel like doing it, just I didn't want to start hating it.
Yeah.
You know, and I wasn't in such a time-crunched phase where I had to do it anyway. It's like, you know, give yourself a day off. It's fine. It'll still be there tomorrow. And it was, and it all got done. So when did I know I finished the last word? I was at the beach with my friend in Georgia, and I just decided, like, today's the day, and you can keep editing and correcting things forever, right? So it's like, this has to be done. Today's the day. Read over everything one more time. And it wasn't the final word because my editor had it then, and we went back and forth a couple of times. So that took a little bit of the pressure off.
Were you sending individual chapters to your editor, or did you kind of dump the whole book at once?
We did half and half.
Okay.
So there was an April deadline and then an August deadline.
And your editor was from, worked for your publisher.
Yes.
So your agent found your publisher, mm-hmm. publisher's going to do the book, and then they signed you an editor.
Mm-hmm.
And was it an editor who specialized in your area?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's the psychology books editor at Oxford.
Oh, very good.
So she knew a fair amount about psychology and how to explain it to the public.
Yeah.
So she was great.
So is this the imprint that it's printed under Oxford? Is mm-hmm. this a psychology imprint or a travel imprint, or is your book sort of a whole new thing?
It's a whole new thing. So this is actually something important that I learned in the process of pitching a book, is that even though they talk about how bookstores aren't, you know, the force that they used to be,
mm-hmm.
they want to know, where in the bookstore will this book go?
Right.
And I did not know that. And I'm like, well, it's kind of psychology and it's kind of travel.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, well, which one is it more? And that, when I was pitching, that was my biggest problem. The first guy, he's like, well, yeah. I don't know where we'd put this. And
yeah.
you need to take a stand and argue why it goes here. So ultimately it's in travel.
Okay.
It's in the travel section. But my thought was like, put it in both.
Well,
put
yeah.
it in both sections, but yeah. it doesn't work that way.
And put it in both sections and see which one sells
yeah.
more.
And put it right up front too.
Yeah. Well, of course,
of
obviously.
Course.
Yeah. Local author. And put in the local authors section.
Yeah.
So we're here in Charlottesville.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen your book in bookstores?
I have not, because I was in New York for the book release.
Oh, okay.
The last couple of days. So I just got back 2 days ago and have not. Maybe I'll go there right now after being here.
Go where? Do you know where it is?
Well, Barnes & Noble would be the...
Mm-hmm.
And another thing I should do is talk to local booksellers.
Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to put that on your to-do list.
Okay, please do.
So the outline that you mentioned, the 6,000, 8,000 words, how much of that... how much of that was in your pitch to the agent? You said you hadn't really written,
mm-hmm.
If I remember, you hadn't really written that much. Did you just have a bare outline when you met your agent?
I had an extensive outline for myself.
Okay.
With all the references I wanted and everything. And I take a lot of comfort in outlining and knowing it, 'cause otherwise
yeah.
it's just blank pages.
Oh, yeah.
An outline, you're like, okay, this is where I'm going. I just need to expand all these ideas. And if you keep expanding the outline, pretty soon it's like it writes itself. So I love outlining. But I had a general outline, like the different chapters, and it pretty much stuck to that. What each chapter was going to be, what are some practical tips each chapter will contain, and they got that.
And being in academia, you're used to research. So I mentioned there was a lot of research in the writing process itself. You have a sense of, you know, 10% of your time, 20% of your time was spent researching, the rest spent writing, or was it a real mix depending on what you were writing about?
It was a real mix. Some of the chapters were much more in my wheelhouse. So there was one chapter on savoring and being present that I knew a lot of the research I wanted to mention
mm-hmm.
ahead of time. So I didn't have to do a lot for that at all. There were some chapters on, like, how do you find the right kind of travel experience for you and your personality? And that was a little bit more. I had to go into the leisure studies area of academia, which is a whole field, leisure studies.
Interesting.
Or tourism studies.
Yeah, yeah.
There are journals, like the Journal of Tourism Studies, which are so boring. Like, they are the most boring articles to read.
Oh, no.
You would think that they would be interesting.
Yeah.
But, oh, man. So I had to kind of delve into that literature, because they're the ones who want to try to figure out what kind of trip is best suited for each kind of person. And so that was kind of new.
So is your emphasis in your book on individuals who are planning their own trips, you know, like maybe with a partner? Or do you also talk about groups, you know, getting on a bus or getting on a boat and going off with a bunch of folks that you may or may not know?
I mostly talk about individual travel.
Yeah.
In the second chapter, I do have like a kind of a questionnaire. I have a lot of questionnaires throughout that people can take. What kind of trip is right for you? And there are certain kinds of travelers who are better suited to group travel. They don't want to make their own plans. Yeah. They want it all set up for them. Yeah. And I don't really say much more than that, except that's, you know, find that.
Right.
And there's so many of those organizations out there that it's not that hard.
Yeah.
So.
Have you ever taken a group trip or?
When I was on those Europe trips.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And they were like 28, 30 people.
Yeah.
And they taught me how introverted I am and how much I need to just be on my own for a little bit of time each day. It actually taught me that I should travel by myself because those were always the happiest times of my day was when I was by myself. So it's like, all right. I think I like people in everyday life, but when I travel, I don't want to have to, you know, compromise on everything all the time and follow people around in a herd. And anyway, I took it too far. I realized like, oh yeah, 2 months on my own is lonely. I think I like breaks within my time with people, but then I like to get back together for dinner or you know, you gotta have some, I like a mix, but it was a long
And have
learning
you,
process.
In your travels now, have you made friends in other countries that you can now go back and spend time with?
Yeah, a little bit here and there. Mm-hmm. A little bit here and there. Mm-hmm.
So a technical question about the writing. When you make an arrangement with a publisher, do they tell you what you should be writing, what word processing or how you should be writing? Do they just take anything you do, like do it in Microsoft Word? Or does your publisher say, no, open up our website and use this writing application?
They were very open. It was Microsoft Word. Mm-hmm. We did talk a little bit about footnoting versus like an end notes at the end. And we did end notes because we thought footnotes were distracting. So there was some specific formatting for that. But and then like what kind of reference style do you use? I use Chicago style.
Sure.
But otherwise it was very open.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So is there going to be a Happy Traveler class being offered to your students at JMU?
Well, that's an interesting idea. I'm definitely, now that the book is out, we'll be using it in study abroad, mm-hmm. probably giving it to my students. And we can talk about not just what do we do in Scandinavia and what's Scandinavia like, but how can we just in general get more from everyday life? And then one way we wrap up the class is the last chapter in the book is all about how to be a traveler at home. So how do you live each day with sort of that traveler's mindset? We live in a travel destination.
Yeah.
You know that? We live in a travel destination. People come here.
People come
for
here.
Vacation.
Yeah.
And yet we drive past the rotunda. We don't even notice it. We, you know, drive past. I drive every day over the Blue Ridge Parkway on my way to JMU. Mm-hmm. And some days I'll be like, yeah, wow, it's so beautiful. But most days I'm just like, you know, what do I have to do today? What's for lunch? And so how do we bring those attitudes and mindsets back with us in everyday life? So we talk about that in the class as well.
Jamie, thank you so much for coming on here. I think your book not only hits a niche market that a lot of people need, but it's the perfect time of year.
Yeah.
Because this is when people are going out and making their plans. And the great thing about your book is it doesn't tell you how to plan your vacation. If you've already planned it, it's mm-hmm. telling you how to be present on it. So the book is The Happy Traveler. My guest has been Jamie Kurtz. I will say the website one more time, J-A-I-M-E, Jamie Kurtz, K-U-R-T-Z.com. Go there and find out about the book. By all means, support your local bookseller. And thank you so much for being on the show and talking to us and telling us about your adventures.
Well, thank you. It was very fun.
This is Sean McCord, and this has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC-LP Charlottesville.